back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a glorious holiday season. I'm doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, celebrating my 30th anniversary. We'll be doing that at Costas on the 15th. We begin that celebration on the 9th at the Beaumont in Catonsville. But this Friday, we're going to be at Pappas in Cockeysville. It's all presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We'll be playing former Oriole Mike Bordick will be joining us on Friday. Jim Reese from Offa Kerman, fresh off of his Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives cameo, as well as our sponsor and friend, Leonard Raskin from Raskin Global, who gave me some good rental versus owning advice this week. We're also going to be talking about the road race. John Kelly from Kelly & Associates joining us this week at Pappas from noon until 3. This guy has joined me for beers and food and football and baseball and frozen custard. From Philly, spent a lifetime in St. Louis, from football back to football and the Rams and all of that. Now makes his time as a desert rat out in Phoenix. He is sunning himself in semi-retirement. We welcome the man, the myth, the legend. You can follow him out on Twitter. I've been reading him since Football Digest in 1981 when the Colts were still here. Howard Balzer, how the heck are you? I have praise and damnation for you all in one 25-minute segment. Howard, how are you?
Well, I appreciate it. Things are great. I will say one thing that don't say to my wife that I am semi-retired, right? Because she would totally disagree with that assessment. But yeah, in the desert, in the Phoenix area, and loving it. Been here for, oh goodness, I mean, we're about about a week away from our 1 year anniversary of closing on our new home out here. I've been out here since September of 2020, moved in the middle of a pandemic and in the middle of a football season, which was quite interesting to say the least. But settled in, enjoying it, and having a lot of fun covering the team again.
Howard, I got to give you a little history for me here. I mean, when my wife had cancer, we came in 2015 as part of the 30 ballparks in 30 days. My wife and I came out to your studio right by Forest Park. We drove through the park. You told me you got to get this frozen custard at Ted Drew's. And since that day, I've been going faithfully to getting frozen custard. They sell it in the airport. I have literally flown to Phoenix, and it's like, do you want to lay over in Midway or Nashville or Atlanta? And I always pick St. Louis because I get the frozen custard, right? The cookies and cream, the little bar comes out in the airport, drops it like you've won a prize. You know, it's great. So I went to St. Louis. I blew off the Ravens-Lions game. So I elected to not go to the game where the longest field goal in the history of the NFL. I know you were probably there for the Tom Dempsey win 50 years ago, but I skipped it. I was in St. Louis that day because Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones were playing their first ever show without Charlie Watts. It was the beginning of the tour. And I decided I don't need John Harbaugh and, you know, in Detroit after the game. I'm going to go to St. Louis. I'm going to see the Stones. I went to Omaha to see the Eagles as well because I had never been to Nebraska or Iowa. So I peed in both states to add them because I needed to do that. My wife gave me a hard time that the airport, stopping in the airport does not mean you were in Omaha. So I actually went to Omaha. So I went to St. Louis and I blew my back out. It's a long story. I dragged my bag on the subway to Ted Drew's, and I blew my back out. I had to get spinal needles on my birthday in October. So all this awful stuff happened, but my St. Louis trip was transcendent because I went into a town that I went with my parents, and I think you know of my love of St. Louis from the 1980s when I went to the Arch when I was a kid, seeing Steve Carlton pitch at Busch Stadium and all that. And I went back. I fly into St. Louis and realize the only reason the Stones are there is because the football team's gone. I'm assuming the only reason you live in Phoenix is because the football team's gone. I went down to the ballpark village to find the Ravens-Lions game that day, figuring they'd have the satellite dish and a casino right nearby as well in downtown St. Louis. I sat there. The Cardinals had won 17 games in a row when I went to that day, and the Padres were flailing and the Cardinals were surging. And I sat in the ballpark village. There was no one watching football. Everyone in there was watching the Cardinals on TV. I think they were playing the Cubs in Chicago that day, I think. So I'm in this Cardinal bar in this former football city. I'm only there because Mix decided to play there because they got a football stadium that nothing's in anymore. And I've been reading Dan Wallach, who's a friend of mine, mutual friend, and being a Baltimore guy and Eminent Domain and Chernoff and Irsay and Hudnut and all these names that come flying back from 1984, I knew I was going to have you on at some point talking frozen custard and football and all that, but the St. Louis football story from the minute they screwed you, Bob Costas, Bernie Miklas, Jeff Gordon, the city, the citizens, the Rams fans, all of that, and stole the team and moved it off to L.A., you were always of the mindset that the league did something illegal and that Kroenke did something illegal. So I'm going to let you pick it up because I sat there that day and experienced life without football in your town, and it was kind of heartbreaking to some, you know, to a large degree. But I also felt like St. Louis is going to be just fine without the Rams. And they wind up getting this lawsuit. But I want to give you some oxygen to tell your story because I had a St. Louis experience 8 weeks ago, and it was really weird. It was really weird.
We need to take about 2 hours, really, which, by the way, you mentioned Dan Wallach. I actually, about three or four weeks ago, and I've done two podcasts with him now on the whole St. Louis issue. But the first one went for 2 hours. And I went all the way back to the Cardinals leaving and all the things that have happened to St. Louis football.
When did you get there? You were there when the Cardinals left, right?
When I went there, the Cardinals were still there. That was
you
in 19...
in the 80s sporting news kind of sort of, or no?
Yeah, I went to St. Louis in 1978.
Wow.
to begin working for the sporting news, and the Cardinals were still there. They left 10 years later to go to the desert when the local politicians just totally messed up any stadium plans that were trying to be put together.
This was after the Colts had left Baltimore, right? So like you were on the doorstep of that, and you covered all of that at Sporting News many years ago. And this fight for a city to regain its name. I remember being in Cleveland when we stole the Browns. I was there and the mayor was up on the stand at 9th Street saying the team, the name, the colors, the team, the name, and the Browns got to keep that. Now, meanwhile, right, we're watching the Colts run around in 1956 jerseys, and somehow Lenny Moore wound up on the sidelines out there last weekend as well. But the history and the lineage of all this, man, you stand right in the middle of all of this because it's greatly affected your life. Like if the Ravens left Baltimore today, would I move to the desert and spend the rest of my life there? It's heartbreaking. It really, really is, given what Rams fans and Cardinals fans before that and Colts and Ravens fans have been through here. This St. Louis, this is a breakthrough thing that's happened with the league, right?
Yeah, it is. And the thing with the St. Louis story is that it also includes not getting an expansion team, which Baltimore was hoping for in the fall of 1993. And there's been so many times where the people of St. Louis just believed things were going to happen. And then whether it was politicians, whether it was owners, whoever it was, just screwed it up. And that happened with the Cardinals leaving. That happened with the not getting an expansion team in 93. Then it happened now with the Rams going back to Los Angeles, and it is heartbreaking for a lot of the fans, and because they you start believing all the narratives you're hearing. And what was interesting about this lawsuit is that just like during the 2015 year when St. Louis put together, Nestor, less than a year, an actionable stadium plan that the league was behind. They knew about it. The committee that was handling all the relocation stuff with the Rams and with the Chargers and with the Raiders, there was a stadium plan put in place in less than a year. And then the league and the Rams said, oh, it's a bad plan. And so they tried to make that the reason that they still allowed the Rams to leave. And now during this whole lawsuit saga, there was the belief that, hey, St. Louis has won every step of the way. They've shown that the NFL acted in a corrupt manner with lies and things like that during the relocation process. And let's remember, if you go back, you mentioned when the Colts left Baltimore to begin with, a lot of it began with the Raiders trying to move to Los Angeles, the league not letting them, and Al Davis and his attorneys making the case that, well, there's no rules, there's no guidelines to govern a relocation. The owners can just decide on a whim whether a team can leave or not. And that was a big reason why the Raiders won that lawsuit, eventually got to Los Angeles, and the NFL put in the relocation rules, which they said to St. Louis all along would be followed. And then after they let him leave anyway, said, well, those relocation rules don't really matter. And so this is all the things that went on. But during this whole process, where it was clear that St. Louis was winning in this suit, there was the belief that part of a settlement could mean getting a team, because that's the issue, losing a team and not having it replaced. And so all the hopes were high, and then the settlement comes in and there's not a sniff of another team, an expansion team, or whatever it is.
So I wondered out loud, and I would have wondered, said this to you 30 minutes ago, does St. Louis need a football? Do they even want a team? Like my vibe on it was F you to the NFL to some degree, that if they came and took the Ravens away from Baltimore and moved into Mexico City or whatever, Baltimore would just be done. Baltimore would just say, we don't need an NFL team, you know? And I don't mean that in any, just sort of, I just felt like St. Louis in taking this $900 million just says, we don't really want to be in your league anymore.
Right. Well, there's a lot of people who believe that. It's certainly not 100% that believe that St. Louis should or would get an expansion team. So many people feel that same way. We don't want to do business with these criminals, maybe not criminals, but you know what I'm saying? We don't want to do business with this league, but there are many people who believed otherwise. You know, they want a team. And so it's mixed. There's no question on that. And so, you know, here we are. But, you know, the real irony in all this, Nestor, is when you talk about a city being wronged, is that, granted, the politicians messed up the stadium negotiations trying to get a stadium built when the Cardinals left, but the league allowed the Cardinals to move to Arizona without the promise of a new stadium. Think of that. There was no promise of a new stadium, no deal, no nothing. They didn't get a new stadium for 20 years and played at Arizona State, where they have aluminum seating. And the funniest story I remember is after the Cardinals left and they put tickets on sale for the games, and they were very high priced and very expensive. And the Cardinals couldn't understand why fans were only buying tickets on one side of the stadium, until someone locally told them, well, you know, they're not buying seats on the other side because that's where the sun beats down during September, when it's still 100 or 105 degrees every day.
And so no one wants to. The Redskins and the Cowboys and the Giants fans all sit there for 20 years, right?
Right. And so in the beginning, for many years, the Cardinals would play three of their first four, sometimes four of their first five games on the road, because the home game would be a Monday night game or a primetime game, because there was no way they were going to have an afternoon game at Sun Devil Stadium for Arizona State in September, much less the preseason. Well, preseason games are most of the time played in the evening anyway. So that's one part of it, that they allowed a team to leave without the promise of a new stadium. They allowed the Rams to leave, even though there was a stadium plan, which they then had to trash to make it seem like, well, that's why, because the stadium plan really isn't that good. And I'm not going to go into all the details here because we don't have a lot of the time, but a lot of those little details, most people don't know nationally. But it was a corrupt process. You know, one of the things that came out in discovery for the lawsuit, and this is why the NFL fought not to have this lawsuit in a courtroom. They were hoping to have it settled by arbitration.
I'm a little disappointed that St. Louis settled, just because, like, if you wanted to hear everything, was to get gritty and get to, I don't know why they settled. Like, that's one of the reasons I'm gathering you and Dan Wallach, is to say, man, they had a chance to just, you know, flog them and didn't do it. And if your point was to really get even and you were going to get $1 billion anyway, and maybe a team, why wasn't there more dog in the fight? I mean, were these two law firms happy to get their $250 million and get out?
I think that was part of it. I think it was also the politicians, the mayor and the county executive, who, let's remember, the attorneys worked for them. And I think they wanted the money, and they wanted a bird in the hand, because the bottom line is, while it looked good that you would win a trial, there's no guarantee. But even if you win, then the NFL is going to appeal and appeal and appeal. And who knows, it might go on. So I think that was a big reason why they decided to settle, not only to settle, but to settle now when they did, when the trial wasn't supposed to begin until early January. So those are all the things that happened.
Well, the league was very, very uptight, right? Like, oh, yeah. I mean, they were getting their ass kicked. You and Wallach totally. Are doing blogs. There's going to be a trial. We're finally going to have, like, listen, Congress is going after these emails for these scumbags. You know, right. the way they kind of railroaded Gruden to get after Mark Davis. Yeah. All the inside fighting that's going on here. I mean, Gruden's going to get after him and get his money. Hey, Kaepernick, they blackballed a guy in broad right. daylight. The little dirty city, he got paid. He got hundreds of tens of millions of dollars right at the end of the day. The payment isn't, they don't mind paying the money.
Right,
it's
exactly.
The embarrassment they don't want, right?
Well,
it's
yeah,
the
well,
truth
exactly.
that they don't want unearthed.
Exactly. And because let's remember, $790 million sounds like a lot of money, but if it ends up being split among all 32 owners, that comes to about $25 million per team, which is the cost of one signing bonus to a top free agent in the offseason. So it's in the scheme of things for the NFL, it's not a lot of money. So I will say this, I think aside for a second, you mentioned, I think John Gruden is filing suit, not necessarily for the money, but he wants to know how this happened, who leaked it, why it happened, and discovery can show that. I think the NFL will probably try to shut it down before there's discovery. I don't know if Gruden will agree to that, but you're 100% right. They didn't want to be embarrassed. Some of the things have come out, but still a lot of people don't know about them because it wasn't covered nationally. A trial would have been. And one of them, just a quick one, is in 2010, which was several years before the whole process began. In 2010, when Stan Kroenke became the sole owner of the Rams, he filed corporation registration papers registering the Rams as a California corporation. In 2010, he did that. He was also a member of the league's LA Stadium Committee as a minority owner in a team. I mean, there's just so much that smells here, but you're right. The NFL didn't want a lot of this coming out. And let's remember too, remember during Spygate, what happened when the NFL discovered all these tapes that the Patriots had for years and years and years? They destroyed them. Well, part of this settlement agreement is that all the discovery documents, all the notes, all those things have to be destroyed. Well, St. Louis Post-Dispatch is trying to file Freedom of Information Acts and things like that so they can get their hands on them. And they've gotten their hands on a certain amount of them. But there's a lot of stuff here that a lot of people don't even know that when happened. It was just dirty. It was just a dirty process. And St. Louis was collateral damage because the league wanted Stan Kroenke's money in Los Angeles. And the other part of it was when they met in Houston almost 6 years ago in 2016 for the final vote, they had a secret vote. I mean, Dean Spanos had 20 to 22 votes in his pocket for the Carson Project, which would have had the Raiders and the Chargers. And
had them both staying in the state, by the way, too.
That's true. And the relocation committee with six owners on it voted 5-1 to recommend the Carson Project to the league. And the only one vote against was Clark Hunt of the Chiefs. And his reason for it is he didn't think that they should put two teams in LA because he questioned that aspect of it. But anyway, they recommended
that. He's a sensible man.
But they recommended that. Most of the time, committee recommendations of things that important are accepted by the league. But Jerry Jones, who had a deal with Kroenke for him to hire his company, Legends, to do a lot of the things that stadiums and teams do, and no conflict of interest there. So he started turning the tide, but they ended up having a secret vote. So Dean Spanos wouldn't know which owners turned on him. And I found this out, and there's a pretty interesting point. Only one time in NFL history, at least in modern day history, had there been a secret vote. And that was when Leonard Tose, back in the 80s, the owner of the Eagles was trying to get a, wanted to get, have a Super Bowl in Philadelphia. Hardly anybody wanted it, but he had, I don't remember exactly how many teams were in the league then. It might've been 28, but he had enough owners voting for Philadelphia to keep any other city from winning the vote. And they actually went to 17 ballots, and it was between Philadelphia and Pasadena. And Pasadena had majority, but they didn't have the three-quarter majority to get the vote. So what did the league do? They decided to have a secret vote so Toast wouldn't know which owners turned on him. Pasadena won, and Philadelphia, of course, wouldn't get and would never get a Super Bowl. But point is, that was the only time a secret vote was used, and that was for a Super Bowl, not for something as big as a stadium, as a team relocation. And so it didn't matter to them that St. Louis was collateral damage. But like I said, the behind the scenes lies and deceit and things that were said is just embarrassing, like you said, for the NFL, but they don't care. They pay the money, make it go away. And in a few years, everyone will have forgotten about it.
Howard Balzer's here talking all things football and civics and stadia and owners. He is out in the desert of Phoenix, chased off by the NFL, moving his team from St. Louis out to L.A. And a Philadelphian, but I didn't realize you got to St. Louis in 78. I thought it was early 80s, but through all of this, you, from the beginning, when you were still living in St. Louis and they stole the team, you were like, this is dirty, this is, you know, all of that. And I'm like, all right, probably no different than Bob Irsay, you know, drinking vodka at 1 o'clock in the afternoon 40 years ago, right? And how these things happen. But the payment now to the city was one of the issues Baltimore was looking for. Cleveland wanted the team and the colors and all of that stuff. This $800 million, and only $500 million is going to go to them because the lawyers, and by the way, Mr. Angelos approves of that lawyerly split. I made that anyway really quickly. Where does that money go? I mean,
yeah.
How does anybody in St. Louis feel? Is this going to like make the schools better or whatever? Like, I'm just shocked they settled, but I understand the greed of the lawyers supersedes any. They're not really about making things whole. They're about getting theirs. And that's what the lawyers do in these cases. Certainly those kinds of lawyers at that sort of level where they're going to get a $250 million settlement, that settling now means money now. Settling later means I might be dead 5 years from now, right? It's like taking a draft pick right now. I'll take the player because I might not have the job 3 years from now or 5 years from now. Certainly politically, if you're a mayor or whatever, you want the win right now because that's going to help you get elected next time around. I don't know where the win is, though. What happens to all this money? I've often wondered, had we had eminent domain and all that back in 1984, what really would have happened here?
No, it's a great question, and that's what many – in St. Louis talk about. They don't trust the politicians to do the right thing with the money. I mean, you know, it's interesting too, the county, St. Louis County, and there's always been this battle between the county and the city over a lot of things. And it was there when I moved to St. Louis, and it's still there. And every few years they come up with some make St. Louis better plan to merge the city and the county, and they can never get it done because there's too many turf wars. But the interesting thing is the county will get some of this money, and they didn't sign on to the stadium plan to keep the Rams. They didn't want any part of it, which was pretty crazy. So we can't underestimate the politicians in this having a big say in settling it. So that's one part of it. But yeah, everybody says, well, we don't trust the politicians to what they're going to do with this money. And so there's going to be a certain amount of pressure on them to do the right thing. And everybody's making suggestions. Oh, do this, do that, whatever it might be. But there's, you know, nobody has a lot of faith in the money going, doing the right thing for the community and for the area. And what's interesting too, though, is in this time that the Rams left, there's been plans put forward to still renovate the dome to bring it up to speed with many convention centers around the country. Because a lot of people don't realize that the stadium was an extension of the convention center, which was a big part of the selling process. And they have a lot of events there in that part of the convention center for boat shows and car shows and the Working Women's Survival Show and all kinds of things like that, where you need a lot of space. And so they were putting forward plans for to renovate the dome and, like I said, bring it up to speed to be able to attract conventions to St. Louis, and that's going to be an expensive process. So who knows? You know, if the money goes to that, because that many would say, well, how does that benefit, you know, the people? Well, it brings in tourism, it brings in people, it does bring in, you know, a certain amount of money that goes into the city and county coffers. So I don't know if that's what will be done with it, but it certainly would make a certain amount of sense. But and you could still have money to do some other things that are necessary also. But, you know, time will tell what they do with it. But there's not a lot of confidence that it'll be done right.
Well, as a Baltimorean, you know, who had my team taken when I was 16 years old by a, you know, drunk guy out to Indianapolis, I certainly feel for you. And I'll say this, in St. Louis, when I landed, it was up by the train station, and I stayed out sort of that way toward like Pappy's and toward Washington University.
Right.
And I walked down the main drag. They're building a beautiful soccer stadium.
Yes.
They built this thing off the train station with this pond and this play area and carousel that's sort of Budweiser and Purina sponsored with this gazebo that's beautiful. So I walked through St. Louis and I really did feel like they're going to be just fine here. They're going to do okay. But I also feel like if the idea was to get a team back, the lawyers weren't going to get paid. So it really becomes sort of a screw job inside of a screw job to some degree, if you really cared about football in St. Louis.
Well, no question. And the bottom line is, the whole story here is they never sort of lost the team in the first place. And the league, one of the stories, I won't go into this in detail, but you know, there was a story in December of 2015 when it was coming up on a vote by the city to approve the financing package. The league twice within a 2-week period publicly in subtle ways tried to sabotage the vote by coming out then and saying, no one would want this stadium plan. This is a bad plan, hoping that the city would vote against the financing. And if that had happened, there'd be no stadium and they'd have a clear path, but they still voted for it. And that set the stage, obviously, for this lawsuit. And just to
sort of, you don't really want the team, even though it's here anyway.
Right,
so let's,
right, exactly.
Let's make it easier for the team to leave. Right.
Right. And so from a personal level, I mentioned back when on the Cardinals left, and then when they didn't get an expansion team, which certainly seemed to be almost a certainty, but the irony there is that Stan Kroenke was involved and part of the reason why St. Louis didn't get an expansion team. And a lot of people don't realize the story behind that. And I was so disgusted thinking a team was coming that, and it wasn't like I decided to do this, but an opportunity came and I left St. Louis for Las Vegas and worked there for a year and a half for a national radio network and came back to St. Louis when the Rams decided to move. So there I was back home. And then here we are X number of years later, the Rams leave and started looking.
You end up going with the Cardinals.
Exactly. Exactly. And ended up coming to the desert, doing a website covering the Cardinals, the team that I was somewhat covering. I wasn't really covering them on a daily basis then, but still they were there when I moved there. And now here I am with the owner, of course, who is the son of the owner, Bill Bidwell. Michael Bidwell is the owner. His dad, Bill Bidwell, was the owner of the Cardinals when they left, and he's the owner now. So there's kind of a symmetry to it all. And of course, living in a beautiful place with great weather. It's almost December here and it'll be 75 degrees or 80 today.
Spring training right around the corner, huh? Right.
Right. And you know, and yeah. And so on top of that, I have my three grown sons. Let's see, two of them were born in St. Louis. One was born a month before we left for St. Louis. All three of them live in the Phoenix area. So it's been kind of cool to be here and enjoy it a lot. And it's great covering the team once again, even though I'm an old guy, but I don't know. There's just that's what I do. I mean, it was just always strange living in a city covering the league, but not having a team in that city.
Howard Balzer is here. You can follow him. Are you still doing Sirius X? What are you doing? Tell everybody what you do, because I follow you on Twitter, so I just see you there.
Well, in addition to the website, which, by the way, is allcardinals.com, and who knows, people might want to read about them in February when the Cardinals are playing the Ravens in the Super Bowl. You never know.
Murray guy's okay, I hear.
I know, yeah, exactly. You could look at just about any the teams at the top in both conferences and make a case for any of them getting that far. But that's all Cardinals.com. Still working for Sirius, doing a Pro Football Hall of Fame radio show. Still do Lindy's Pro Football Magazine. I've been doing that for over 30 years. The preview magazine that comes out every year. Have a weekend, do a weekend shows on a national network called Sports Map Radio. So yeah, like I said, semi-retired is not a way to describe my life.
Everybody moves to Phoenix should be semi-retired, right? I mean, I hope you're not getting frozen custard. I mean, you're there for the
That's
weather
true.
And the pool. Last thing for you, anything you want to say about Lamar or the Ravens? Because, I mean, you know, I could do a half an hour just football with you and not the St. Louis thing, but I really wanted to stir you up on the St. Louis thing based on my Baltimore roots. But here we are with the Ravens, not the Colts anymore, and it's 2021, and you know, they're 8-3, and I look at it and say they're not very good. Now, can they win the Super Bowl in this? I guess they have a great player, but they've lost so many players along the line. And I see this AFC North where maybe Cincinnati's the best team at this point.
They might be. Well, you know, a lot of teams have lost a lot of players. That's one of the stories of this league, and you have to be able, obviously, to overcome it. And I think the big question is how the Ravens will play in the postseason. And I still believe, and Ravens fans might not like to hear me say it, but Lamar Jackson is an electric player, an electric performer, but I still question whether he's a consistent enough passer to win big games in the postseason. I mean, if you look, you mentioned Kyler Murray. If you look at Kyler Murray, if you look at some of the other young quarterbacks, look at Joe Burrow, you mentioned the Bengals, look at some of these young quarterbacks who are leading their teams, and they are all better passers and more accurate consistently than Lamar Jackson. And I still think that's a big question about his game, especially in the postseason. I mean, look at the games this year that this team just rescued out of nowhere, when you wonder, man, they might lose this game. And heck, the Bears was one of them. And so that's a big question with the Ravens. But you look at that, you know, you look at the conference and you say, who else is better? And I don't know if there's anybody clearly better, but you certainly can see him losing to the Bills. You can see him losing to the Patriots. You can see him losing to the Chiefs. And they just have to become a better playoff team to get as far as all the fans there want them to get.
Trying to get healthy for this Pittsburgh game this week and Cleveland around the corner. Howard Balls are covering all things Cardinals, allcardinals.com, as well as at Sirius. You can find him on Twitter. You can find him out in the desert and probably somewhere near that Ted Drew's machine as you fly through St. Louis in the Lambert Airport there. It's great to visit with you. I've been waiting 2 months to have you on. I was going to have you on in the middle of all this stuff, and I heard you doing the two-hour thing with Dan, and I thought, well, if you really want the deep dive on St. Louis, you're going to listen to Howard. But it just brought back all of the worst thoughts I had here about Irsay, and then the Colts put those jerseys on the other day and Lenny Moore went out there, and I'm like, I'm calling Balzer this week. So I appreciate you giving me a little bit of therapy here, brother. Take care of yourself out in the desert. I'm sorry the NFL owners meetings aren't that way, but maybe our paths will cross in Los Angeles in about 6 weeks, right?
Well, they very well could. And the other thing is, how about this? This will be a first for me. A year from February, the Super Bowl is here in Arizona. So I wouldn't have to travel anywhere to get to the game. So certainly looking forward to that.
I got a free crash pad in Chandler, from what I understand. Hey, man, I appreciate you, Howard. Great coming on, man. Be well. And every time I have Ted Drews, I'm going to think about blowing my back out and blame you for it. All right.
Pleasure being with you. And best wishes always for the family.
There was a lovely neighborhood. I took the subway. It just was carrying the bag up the hill.
Oh, yeah.
With the backpack on at 40 pounds that my back didn't like that. Still doesn't like that. So it hurts thinking about it. But boy, that Hawaiian frozen custard I had was delicious. So I don't know if it was worth it or not. Howard Balzer, follow him out at Sirius. Follow him out on Twitter and follow him all the way to the desert for all things Cardinals. You can follow me to Pappas on Friday. It's the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play. Mike Bordick will be joining us. Jim Rees. We're going to have Leonard Raskin stopping by and saying hello. And my pal John Kelly as well, as we get to know Justin and the folks out at Pappas in Cockeysville. It is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I'm sure there'll be a little football involved as well. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive and St. Louis remnants.